All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, week three edition of the show, and more importantly, 2-0 edition of the show as the Bucks pull out another nail-biter. They come back in the final minute for the second time in 2 weeks. They win in prime time for the first time in what feels like forever, and they get themselves ready for the home opener, still yet without a blemish on their record. I'm Bobby Fenton. I want to thank all of you for joining us. I want to thank the Joes for having me on this platform, JoeBucksFan.com. Like I always say, the single best place anywhere for Bucks coverage, TV, internet, or radio. We've obviously got a lot to get to today because normally we do this show and, you know, we're coming off of the previous week's game, talking about that and looking ahead to next week's game. But so many other things have happened even since the Monday night game that it almost feels like an afterthought now because of all the injury news the Bucks have gotten, and it's not good. Of course, injury news by nature is not usually good, but it's particularly bad for the Bucks. So you all know by now, if you're hearing this show, you've been on Joe Bucks Fan, you've been on the internet, you've heard on the radio, whatever it is, there's some injury issues across the team, but in particular, the offensive line. So here's the first thing I want to say, because on the show today, we're going to address a bunch of things. We're going to address the current state of the offensive line. We're going to address what the Bucks can do both in the short term and then even in the long term once guys like Wirfs get back and things like that, and Luke Getteke, who's now going to miss 4 games. But we're also going to talk about how we got here to begin with. So let's start with this, okay? That game on Monday night was a bruiser. And it was one of those games, I mean, every week in the NFL, it's easy for us to sit on the couch and say, oh, hey, that went too bad, or this one wasn't too bad. Every game's a bruiser. But that was a physical game on Monday night, and the Bucks came out by the hair on their chinny-chin-chin, just barely alive from it. Now, given the news that came after the game, and in the subsequent days since the game, some people have suggested, you know, hey, the Bucks are 2-0, but I don't know, they might trade one of those two wins just to not have all the injury news they have. And it got me thinking, like, right now, I actually, like, you know, it's a throwaway line. Oh, yeah, hey, that's tough injury luck. I'll bet you they wish they could change something. Would you actually change anything, like, right now, if I told you they could be completely healthy, no issues, none at all, but they don't pull out that game on Monday night? They're 1-1 instead of 2-0, and they have the loss to the Texans. Or even worse, they're 1-1, but it was the game on the week one game against Atlanta, a division game, a game with much more tiebreaker implications, many more tiebreaker implications than the one on Monday night. What if I told you, no, I'm serious. You can have all your injured guys back, but you give up one of those wins. Because, and this is not taking into account the personal feelings of the guys hurt for their sake, of course, I'm sure they'd rather be back. But looking at the ball club, the state of the program, if you will, I don't know if I would. It feels really, really good to be 2-0. Now, do those injuries cost you more than one win down the road? They might. There's no way to know that. And what do I always say about the NFL? Sample size, sample size, sample size. Football doesn't have it the way baseball does. You know, if you lose a pitcher and you're starting third baseman who's a power hitter in the same game on the same night in some game in the middle of May, even though you pulled out the win, sure, that's even worse than just winning the game was good because you're still, I mean, oh my God, the implications of this. It's just one win here or there in baseball isn't that big of a deal. You'd probably trade it, say, no, you can have the win. We'll take the loss here. I just want my guys back. But in football, one win is huge. And there's a huge difference in the records and all the playoff implications and tiebreakers and all these things that go into everything when you have such a small sample size of 17 games. You know, I don't know what the Bucks' final record will be, but 12-5 is way different than 11-6. And 11-6 is way different than 10-7 or 9-8. It could be the whole season. So obviously, the wins matter. Now, you have to ask yourself, you know, how much will this cost us? There's no way to know that. There's no way to know who will fill in, doing what, and how well they'll do. All I know is it's really sad. First of all, on a personal level, it's sad for the guys because you see how much these guys put into it and how much work goes into it. And I know they still get paid millions of dollars and all that stuff. But still, to go out there in the first game or the second game and just have, oh, season gone. And there are career effects. I mean, these guys, a lot of times they get their surgery, they rehab, and they're back the next year, and it's fine. And we hope that's what happens. But you know, you only get so many years in your career, and you lose one, let alone if there were any lingering effects from these injuries. You don't know. So I feel bad for Cody Mauch. Gedeki should be back, like I said. And, you know, Kalijah Kancey, we didn't even mention the defensive side of things, just talking about the offensive line, but Kalijah Kancey also out. He was supposed to have a breakthrough year. He's battled some injury issues. Feel bad for him. But beyond that, I feel bad just at the idea of what the Bucs' offensive line, for example, was supposed to be. Because this had a chance, you know, still good, but I mean, this had a chance to be one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. You had Worfs at left tackle. You had Bredesen at guard. You had Barton in there at center. You had Mauch at right guard, and you had Gedeki at right tackle. I mean, that just like you're 5 for 5 there. There's no weak link. You're Bredesen's been playing well. I mean, it's fine. Like that's the line. I'd go to war with that line over any in the National Football League. And now, here we are in week two, approaching week three now, I guess it is. And those five guys will not play a single snap on the field together in the 2025 season. Not one. Because Mauch's already out, and Worfs is still yet to get back. So even once Worfs gets back, and once Gedeki gets back, they got 4 of the 5. But it's just really unfortunate. And it doesn't mean, like I said, that they can't do things. This week, though, they're in a real pickle because they got 3 starters out. You know, Worfs will eventually get back. I don't think it'll be this week. They're still trying to plan on week 5, maybe week 4, but I don't think week 3 this Sunday. And then you've got Gedeki, who has been placed on IR, if you didn't already hear. So he has to miss a minimum of 4 games, which means he'll miss weeks 3, 4, 5, and 6 for sure. So week 7's the earliest we could have at least a full offensive line of what's left. And we'll talk about what the Bucs have to do to get through these next couple of games, taking on a Jets team, which at least seems like a fairly decent matchup for them in the home opener. Not that there's ever a good time to be dealing with injury issues, but maybe this is the one. We'll get to that in a few minutes. But first things first, I always want to recap the previous game, especially this one, because Monday night was just a lot. I mean, Monday night was emotionally a lot if you were like really invested in the games as a fan like I am and like I know a lot of you are. And looking back at that game now, I mean, the way it ended, and obviously the final drive and the final minute and the offense digging in, Baker Mayfield doing incredible things, showing incredible toughness, and it wasn't just him, but, you know, the scramble on fourth down, a million things happen, and you think, oh, Bucs offense, they come back and run the 2-minute drill and they get the win, and that's kind of what everybody talks about. The story of Monday night was the Bucs defense. It's amazing. And you think about going back to last year, and the Bucs defense was like the weak link, right? We never worried about the offense. It's like, man, can the defense hold up? Well, the offense got going early. Both offenses got going early. There were no punts in the first few possessions. And then after that, things shut down. And it stayed 14-10, 14-10, 14-10 for a long time. And the defense kept making stop after stop after stop after stop. Doing all this with no turnovers forced and no turnovers by the Bucs either. But just getting stops over and over and over. And, I mean, I was watching the game with my friends. I had a few friends over to the house, and one of my buddies, Laughlin, he was like, can you believe, like, we're sitting here, like, the offense is the one we're worried about? We're just completely, like, just relying on the defense, not even worried about it. Know they're going to get the stop. Know they're going to get off the field. Started to take it for granted as that game went on. And then even some bad things finally. Even the touchdown they gave up to Chubb, they let it happen. You know, because they had to get the ball back. I wasn't sure if that was the move, but once he scored, I definitely said, oh, well, okay, whatever. At least we get our crack now. And obviously special teams of the 3 units was the one that had the worst night. They gave up the punt return, the block punt. It just a lot of things happened in that game. That's a game the Bucs normally lose. Like, that's a game we've seen a million of those types of games. Same with Atlanta in week 1, to be honest with you. A million of those types of games where it's back and forth, 8,000 different things happen in the game. It's like a dramatic soap opera, and then at the end when the dust finally settles, even with everything that happened, there's just one little extra thing that went against you that would have changed the outcome, but you just come up a little bit short. That's what usually happens in those situations, and 2 weeks in a row, they have found a way to overcome it. Oh, that Chase McLaughlin, I forgot about the missed kicks. But the defense and the goal line stand in particular, which, by the way, I mean, that complete hats off to the defense, incredible goal line stand there. But once again, I mean, football is littered with this. And if you're a University of Florida fan and a Gator like I am, you watch Billy Napier's offenses do this on a weekly basis. It's so frustrating. 4th and goal and the Texans try that little sprint rollout thing, I mean, I immediately, like the millisecond Stroud took the snap and started rolling left, I felt good. I was like, they're right there on the goal line. This stuff never works. Go forward. Don't go sideways. Don't get cute. Just go forward. And when they didn't go forward, I felt awesome about it. And it's still, I mean, there was a little rub action there. Great job in communication in the secondary to make sure everybody had their guy and nobody got open. And the Bucs get the stop there. I know that D'Amico Ryans, the Texans head coach, said after the game, you know, you can't score in that situation. You don't deserve to win. And it's true. I mean, that was really eventually what it came down to. But there were plenty of other chances that the Bucs had to also not deserve to win. And, in fact, they earned a few of those chances and still were able to come out on top. But still, Baker Mayfield, and I want to mention Sterling Shepard, too, because he made another really huge play on a third down conversion where he was covered. It was a scramble drill, Baker Mayfield rolling right, and Shepard worked his way back through two members of the Texans secondary, got in there, and found a way to get open right near the sideline, made a catch, keep a drive alive. I always harp on, with Baker Mayfield, how important, not that he's Randall Cunningham or anything, and he scrambles a ton, but the way he's able to create things when there's nothing there with his legs, and it's usually on third downs, or in this case it was fourth down, but it's such a big part of our offense. When you have a drop back, initial play call's not there, pocket's collapsing. If you do a freeze frame of that fourth down run, I mean, he's in the middle of like a blender full of Texas or Houston pressure. And he just kind of dipped a shoulder and slides through and boom, goes and picks up the first down. And we're screaming at the TV. We're like, okay, you got the first down, go down. He tries to cut it back inside, gets clipped in one leg, somersaults. We're like, oh my God, holds onto the ball. Then he goes down, grabs his leg like he's out. I mean, right then I thought he's out for the year. I'm like, oh good, Bakes out for the year. He just twisted his knee or some, and then he immediately gets up, and then the shit talk starts with Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. Like, okay, I guess he's fine. I mean, it's like the antidote for him is just getting up. He may well have been. He actually may have torn his patella tendon, and it healed immediately right there with him just getting up to talk more junk to Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. I don't know. I give the guy so much credit. And he didn't have his best game, again, passing the ball. In fact, it was a huge miss earlier to Amika Abuka where he was wide open and Mayfield was rolling out. And, yes, it was a rollout throw kind of across his body. It was not an easy throw, but he threw it a little behind and over Abuka's head instead of just leading him to the sideline. I make it sound easier than it is, but a big miss there that I thought when he missed it, I was like, oh, that was the one, man. That was the one, and we're not going to get another chance like that. But they found a way. And let's give Todd Bowles a little credit, too, for his end-of-game management because actually in real time, you know, I thought they were doing well on the final drive, but then they had three timeouts, and I thought they should have used one more than they did. Honestly, it worked out for them. But they got down inside the 10, still had the timeouts. I'm like, use one of the timeouts. Like, clock is ticking. And they only, once you're an and goal like they were, at that point you only have four more plays, so you don't even need to leave time for more than four plays because four plays is all you have anyway. But and they scored on an early, I think it was second down when they scored the game-winning touchdown, right? So if they hadn't, they had time for third down for sure. I'm not sure they would have had time for fourth. They would have been close. Closer than it had to be because they ended up taking two timeouts with them when they only need. They could have still burned one more and still had one more to burn. But the timeouts being held onto did give them the option to call any play they wanted anywhere on the field. And especially in goal line, that's big because when you're in goal line and you can't run the ball because they know you don't have any timeouts, and if it doesn't score your hose, that changes the calculation a lot. So having the timeouts meant they could run the ball, they could pass the ball if it didn't work. Not every play had to be either touchdown or bust or incomplete because the clock would stop. They could stop the clock any way they wanted. But either way, just in general, that's a nitpick. I thought Todd Bowles, and I think in general Todd Bowles' end game stuff has been getting a lot better lately. What else would I – oh, I'm making some notes as the games are going on, and I rewatch the games later. Oh, the Levante interception drop, I thought, you know, in hindsight we can laugh at now, but that could have cost him the game. And it's ironic because if you remember Atlanta last year, the game in Atlanta on Thursday night when he did catch an interception on fourth down, which cost him 20 yards of field position and probably cost him the game, that's the one we wanted him to drop. Of course, now he drops it, which would have been, you know, a huge interception to get. And then there's Chase McLaughlin. Talk about that for a second real quick, because no Bucs kicker that I can remember has ever been that good and that reliable. I say has like he's gone or something. It could still be. but has been up to this point, let's say, that good and that reliable. I mean, the guy is like a cyborg, like a robot. You don't even think about him. He just goes out there and pops it through. So he had a little bit of a rough week one. He missed an extra point, missed a field goal. And I said on the show last week, didn't I? I said, I don't know about this. I don't like this. Not because of the everybody misses every now and then, but the way it happened right off the bat like that in week one, and it was 2-1 game, I was very concerned that it was more than just a couple misses because these things turn mental. And now you're thinking in a way you never thought before, and you're dealing with things in your mind that you never dealt with. And so, okay, let's just see how week two goes. Well, week two, he doinks one. What was it, 38 yards? I mean, the kind of thing that you wouldn't even like bother to watch normally. You get up and go to the bathroom because you know he's going to make it. And so now he misses that. Then they show him on the sideline. He's doubled over, like looking at the ground. You're like, oh, my God, this guy is completely on tilt now. Every single kick the rest of the season, regardless of the distance and regardless of the situation, feels like it's going to be a mini, like I said, soap opera. And that's no way to go through things. I'm not saying he'll do that. I didn't like what I saw there beyond just the miss. The body language, now we got Todd Bowles saying you need to make the damn kick to the media, which he's right. I'm not nothing, but it's just a thing now, you know? Like, you know when something's not a thing and all of a sudden it's a thing? So this isn't just a missed kick here and there. This is officially, quote-unquote, capital A, capital T, a thing. And they've won two close games despite it so far. So huge to get these wins, by the way. Cannot tell you how big it is to be 2-0 instead of 1-1. And they get it done. But it's something to keep an eye on for the remainder of the week. So now let's look ahead to the Jets, and let's look ahead to the injury situation. First of all, with Kalijah Kancey being out, let's give hats off to Elijah Roberts and Greg Gaines. I thought both of those guys came in. Elijah Roberts had a sack. Greg Gaines was all over the Texans' backfield. Let's give them a lot of credit, okay, first of all. Second of all, they've brought in Elijah Simmons now. They've made a couple of moves. These are going to be guys that are practice squad guys at their places or guys who are on the Bucs practice squad. But it's still about Elijah Roberts, about Greg Gaines. Logan Hall needs to step up now and do more. And that's just on the inside. Outside, Hassan Reddick's been really good through 2 weeks. So he has been everything the Bucs acquired him to be, basically. Yaya Diaby, on the other hand, has not been. So that's an issue there, independent of the injuries. But they're not getting enough off the edge from Yaya. They are getting more than I was anticipating they would get from Hassan Reddick so far. But need more from Logan Hall. Give Vita Vea some help up there. And it's a good chance, if nothing else, to see if Elijah Roberts and Greg Gaines can flash a little more. On the offensive line, going back to what we talked about early in the show, I mean, for this week, and it's not out there yet as far as an official five they're going with for the offensive line, but yeah, I have to figure they stay the same with Barton at left tackle. Mike Jordan, who's done pretty okay filling in at left guard, actually did not practice. He's also, first of all, he's got an injury thing, but he's also not listed on the official injury report because he's technically on the practice squad as of this moment. He keeps getting elevated for these games, but he's on the practice squad. He's got one more elevation before they have to permanently put him on the 53, so they could do it again for week three if they want to do that. But he could play left guard, assuming everything's fine with his injury, whatever that is. Bredesen back at center. You've got Heck at right tackle for now, which is not ideal. He has not been good, quite honestly. It's just something. A tough assignment against the Texans, I get it. In fact, I thought the Texans front seven did a really good job. And yet the Bucs still ran the ball well. The Bucs, it felt like, and in week one they didn't run for anything. The Bucs right now, let me look at this here, get these numbers right. Bucky Irving, Rashad White, rushing, number one, and this is with a bad game in week one, by the way, rushing the ball. Number one in EPA per carry and rushing success rate, the Bucks as a team, which is, in this case, Irving and White. So, and they both made big plays on Monday night, but it's just, to me, they looked like they were good on Monday. I didn't realize they were that good. Good enough to put them number one in the league despite a weak rushing week in week one. So they've done a great job, and you know they're not going to have the top offensive line in front of them going forward, at least not for a while. But looking back at that, the Bucs with the offensive line at right guard now, Suo Peta, they brought him back. He was in Utah, like gone, like he wasn't on the team anymore, not even on the practice squad. Gone. They've brought him back in. Elijah Klein is a guy they could use. I think Dan Feeney they brought in this week. So, I mean, it's just one of those things, man. I mean, none of these guys are going to be top shelf as far as that goes, but they've just got to piece it together and try and get through every week. Like I said, at least they're going up against a team in the Jets that is not very good and has not had a lot of success defensively, losing their first two games, giving up 38 points and 30 points to the Steelers and the Bills, respectively. And then they've got injuries on their part, too. You've got Tyrod Taylor starting for them. Justin Fields, the starting quarterback, is hurt, and he has a concussion. So Tyrod Taylor at age 36 will play. I don't think that actually makes that much of a difference, honestly. And it's not that Fields is bad or something, but if you look at the numbers, and again, one guy's in his 30s and one guy is in the first few years of his career, but Tyrod Taylor is averaging slightly higher EPA per play more than Fields. And this is just since Fields entered the NFL, so this is just the last few years of Tyrod Taylor in his 30s. This isn't even his whole career. Averaging a little bit better EPA per play more than Fields. His success rate is a couple points higher as well offensively than when Fields is in there and since Fields entered the NFL. So I don't know how much you really downgrade the Jets offense based on the quarterback thing. And New York also, and these numbers as always are courtesy of Dr. Bob Stoll, who's always got great numbers. Give him a follow on Twitter. He's got a lot of information. The Jets have a situation-adjusted pass rate 21 percentage points below average. That's the most run-heavy team in the league. The next most run-heavy team is Philadelphia, and they're 12 percentage points below average. So the Jets aren't just the most run-heavy team, but by far the most run-heavy, which lessens the impact of having a different quarterback in there, especially when that quarterback isn't that much worse than your starter anyway. But then you got the Jets' ground game going up against the Bucs' run defense, which is allowing the second worst EPA per rush to opponents. So the Bucs' run defense has just been lights out. And it was, again, this on Monday night. I mean, the Texans couldn't do anything on the ground and not much through the air either. It's just something that the Bucs' defense is – you got to tip your hat to these guys. And I hope that they're able to keep that going. I think, like I said, for any week you're going to have the type of injury issues they have, there are no good weeks to do it. I think the Bucs still have a pretty good chance to be 3-0. Not that I'm discounting what the Jets could do. I wish they were 1-1. I don't like a team that's off to an 0-2 start. But I feel like, you know, if there's the week to have some injury issues, maybe they can get this done. Now, one thing the Bucs are weak on, and the Jets are going to try and do, I can tell you this now, look for lots of screens attempted by the Jets. The Bucs have the second worst, and this is kind of a testament to their linebacking core, especially Servasia Dennis, 31st last year. This is all last year, so this isn't even counting anything Dennis did. 31st of 32 teams in how well running backs do catching the football against them. They give up a lot of yards receiving to opposing running backs, and that was through a full sample size of 2024. Just through 2 weeks of the 2025 season, the Bucs are ranked 29th of 32 in that category. And then to compound it, the Jets have a 26% target share to their running backs, which is the fifth most. So the Bucs aren't good at defending the screen game, and the Jets like to use the screen game, and they should this week, especially given their limitations elsewhere. So we'll see how it all goes. But the offensive line, it's going to be an issue on Sunday. It's going to be an issue going forward. It would be an issue against any team you're playing. Even against the Jets, though, it will be an issue, and it's just one of those things. I've heard theories being thrown around. I had a few people I saw, and I was listening to my satellite radio, whatever was on there, and everybody's talking about, like, what's going on. Because it's not just the Bucs. There's been some injuries that – I don't have the exact numbers, but it might not be as bad as people think. But, you know, what's with these guys getting hurt so much more? And it is particularly with the Bucs. And I've heard, oh, well, they don't play the preseason anymore, and the hitting limits they've imposed in practice, they don't hit enough anymore, and they need to get ready and blah, blah, blah. I don't know about it. And listen, I've never played in the NFL. I mean, I've played football at the lower levels. I've never had it be my job or played at the level those guys play. To me, you know, hitting is not like weightlifting. Like, weightlifting is hard, but it makes you stronger. Like, after you lift weights and you come out of it and you recover, you're stronger than when you started before you had not weightlifted yet. You know, like, weightlifting strengthens you through the difficulty. I don't think hitting's like that. I think hitting just weakens you. Like, it's not like, oh, hey, they need to hit more so they get hurt less. No, I think you just get hurt more if you hit even more than you need to. Now, there is something to be said maybe for going at game speed. I know they have the joint practices, I know they have all the things they do in training camp, but it's still a little bit – I mean, I don't know. I feel like maybe if they played one – not even a whole game, but played a few series in one preseason game, maybe that would help a little bit. But I don't think it would make that – I think that's just a theory people throw out there. And you look at Cody Mauch, I mean, he's never missed a start. He's never had issues. I mean, Kalijah Kancey, at least you say, okay, and it, I'm not saying this is anything wrong with Kancey, but he's had injury issues in a way that, you know, maybe other players haven't. Not saying that they're his fault or anything, because it's just a lot of times bad luck. But Mauch, and Mauch played the rest of the game. They were trying to, Evan Klosky from Channel 10, who's a great sports anchor, by the way, on his Twitter feed, if you go to that, he posted what he thinks might be one of the two plays where Mauch hurt himself, and it looks certainly possible. It's hard to say because, you know, Mauch didn't give much of an invitation. He stayed down a little longer on one of the plays than the other, and then he got up. But still, he's running kick-out blocks on Danielle Hunter and pulling and stuff the rest of the way on a season-ending knee injury and just finished it out. And that's why everybody was so stunned the other night. So, yeah, I don't know if it's anything other than randomness or bad luck or whatever it is, whatever theories you want to have. But the Bucks certainly seem to have been bitten by it more than other teams. Obviously this year, and beyond that, just in recent years, I still believe, I mean, you look back at going back to 2021, I mean, you had the Antonio Brown thing, which wasn't an injury, but you had Worf's injury that year in the postseason in the first game against the Eagles. And I still believe if they have Worf's and Antonio Brown, and again, I know Brown wasn't an injury, if they have him, those two guys, they win the Super Bowl that year. They repeat in 2021. That's one of those things I'll firmly believe as long as I'll take that to my grave. And they've had injuries ever since, and some years are worse than others. 2020 was a great year for injuries, and look what happened. So it's a 17-week season. It's long. They'll get some guys back, and other guys will step up, and, you know, I think they have a chance to be okay. Really, really, really would like to see Wirfs get back as soon as possible, though. And not just that, but be himself. Because, like I said last week on the show, who really knows? Like, do you really know? You hear all these things, oh, he's got, you know, he's missing cartilage or he's bone on bone. Oh, no, it's fine. They fixed it up. Okay. You know, I don't, I mean, he might not even know. He probably doesn't until he gets out there. So it's worrisome. And that's beyond just this season. That's worrisome in general because that's a guy you hope plays 10 more years and, you know, plug and play, and he's a Hall of Famer and all that. Yeah, I'm not saying he's not going to be, but it sucks. I mean, I say it all the time. Football really is the perfect sport. Like, if you told me to take all the sports, like, what one would I change the least about? Whether it's rules, gameplay, everything. Like, football is the perfect sport, but for one thing. And that is, just sports in general have these, not just football, but injuries, man. Like, if you could just be bionic and play the game of football, the game you see the explosiveness, the power, the speed, the collisions, and everybody just get up and dust themselves off and go home and not have any CTE or not have any season-ending injuries or not have any sore joints, or man, wouldn't that be perfect? Because football's got everything else, but it takes a toll. It really does. And you know, it's easy for us to sit there in the stands and say a guy is injury-prone, quote-unquote. Injury rate in the NFL is 100%, man. It's just the way it is. Some guys have it worse than others, but it feels like there's some bad juju, and I don't believe in that, but that's what it feels like right now. But weather the storm. Get through this game. You can beat the Jets. The Bucks are a better team than the Jets, and I mean, when I say the Bucks, I mean the 53 or 48 after inactives, whatever it is. The 50 guys they suit up on this Sunday, this one Sunday, without the other guys that are hurt, even those 50 are better than the Jets 50. You're at home for the home opener. You're wearing those gorgeous uniforms, by the way, which I can't wait to see. The Bucks throwbacks with white. Now, like I've said, they're throwing back to 1976 specifically. When I think of the Bucks white jerseys, I think very precisely of the red numbers, the ones you saw all through the 80s and 90s, right? The white jersey, red numbers, orange trim, and even the orange pants to go with those. The ones they're going to wear with the orange numbers, those were only worn for one season, and that was the opening season in 1976. But not only that, people don't realize this. There's a great website to check all this. Gridiron Uniform Database is Google it. It's got what uniforms every team has worn for all of their games. Every game from any season. It's incredible. So In 1976, the Bucks wore this uniform they're going to wear on Sunday for all 14 games. They only wore their orange jerseys in the preseason that year. People don't realize it. And then for 14 straight, white jerseys, orange numbers, red trim, white pants, exactly what you'll see out there on Sunday. It's going to look gorgeous, especially contrasted against the Jets' green. Should be a really nice uniform matchup. So actually, when you think about it, the Bucks could win for the first time ever in this throwback uniform that they are wearing that they've already worn before, because they were literally 0-14 in 76. Then in 77, they changed the numbers to red, I think, because of visibility. And that's the white jerseys that we're all familiar with. And speaking of jerseys, since I always find a way to squeeze in some uni talk on the free stretch, and uniforms in general, not just jerseys, how nice did the Bucks look on Monday night wearing their proper uniforms without these stupid white pants? And I know people that insist, oh, I love the red jersey, white pants combo. You have bad taste. I'm going to say, this isn't like one of those opinions like I like chocolate ice cream, you like vanilla. If you think the white pants look better on the Bucks than pewter pants with either jersey, the white jerseys or the red jerseys, you have bad taste. You should be on some sort of a watch list. And I do not want to hear anything about what you think about uniforms in general, because that one take should eliminate you. They look so much better in the pewter pants. It's this quintessential classic Bucks uniform, and they wore it Monday night instead of this nonsense where they've been wearing the white pants all the time, which is a preseason. If it was me in charge, I would wear only white pants in the preseason, and that's like a thing you have to earn making the team. Okay, now we're going to wear the nice uniforms for the real games in the regular season. But the Bucks have never looked good in red jerseys and white pants. The helmet and the pants matching and the way they look Monday night, chef's kiss, beautiful. And this week with the throwbacks will be beautiful as well. Rays game later that night, by the way. It's the doubleheader in the stadium area as they move the Rays game. It doesn't matter. The Rays are out of it, but still, it's, you know, the novelty of it's kind of cool. And short of that, should be, I mean, the weather's pretty nice, but yeah, it's going to be hot, 1 p.m. on Sunday, although the Rays have been doing it all summer long, so now it shows you it's not that bad. And of course, the Bucks have been doing it for a lot longer than that. So have fun if you're going to the game, and I know that everybody's going to be real excited out there for the home opener, even though it's weird having the home opener in week three when it's so late in the season, because the season is kind of not, doesn't feel new anymore, but it's still the first game of the year at home as the Bucks will take on the Jets, and we'll see if they're able to get to 3-0. I honestly think they can and should be by the end of this. So either way, if you're going to the game, if you're staying home and watching it on TV, have some friends over, whatever it is, be safe, have fun. Have a great weekend out there. I want to thank all of you for listening. Thanks to the Joes at joebucksfan.com for giving me the platform to get out here in front of you. It's always an honor and a privilege to be on the best place anywhere for Bucks coverage, TV, internet, or radio. I'll talk to you next week, hopefully talking about a 3-0 football team. But until then, take care of yourselves. And wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.